This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast. Back at it with Jason Botchford, another edition of the Patcast. And Botch, where did it go wrong? Last time we did this, this was a 3-0 hockey club. They were on the verge of becoming a 4-0 hockey team. And what a difference a week makes, man. You want storylines? We got storylines. Good thing that there's not an end time to this podcast. Yeah, I hope you brought dinner. We could be here a while.
Yeah, there certainly is a lot to talk. And there's still 4-2 and 1. And pretty much on, you know, right at the top of the division, I guess second to the Oilers. So it hasn't all gone south yet, but there are some alarming trends, some troubling things that are happening with the team. And I would, you know, it looks like on and off the ice.
Where to start? I know where you want to start, so we'll go there.
I know where you want to start. You started up with Virtanen yesterday, and you got the ball rolling on the big Virtanen story. And of course, yeah, I do have a lot to say about Troy Stetcher. I could go... Because I really think what happened, and I know it's very dour right now, and the team's last in goals, and it's really negative. But I think what happened Tuesday against the Senators was really a beautiful thing. Like, it really was. I don't think people realized what we saw. And I just want to tip my hat to all of the Stetcher supporters out there, the so-called Troy soldiers, because we were right. We called it from the beginning. The momentum carried on. We said this guy could play. We said it through preseason. And he was in an impossible situation on Tuesday. He was asked to step into the skates of Chris Tanev, the team's best defenseman. He was asked to play on the top pairing. And he was super. He wasn't good. He wasn't solid. He was fan-freaking-tastic in that game, all things considered, where he was, what he was asked to do. And the greatest part is his big forte, the best part of his game, is the power play. And he didn't even get a power play shift, Jeff. He was out there defending. He was out there creating offenses. He was out there doing stretch passes like that were 70 feet long to Louis Erickson in the middle of the ice. Louis Erickson, who has produced no offense on his own, almost produces a rush chance because of Troy Stetcher. Okay? Hoffman, one of the fastest guys in the entire league, has like 10 feet on him, a huge jump. What does he do? He spins around, pokes up his stick, and prevents Hoffman from getting even a shot on net when Hoffman had a breakaway. I mean, it was incredible to watch. And then it's incredible for me to hear about, oh, he was solid. Oh, he was at fault for the first goal. No, he made the right play on the first goal against. It didn't work out. That happens. It was a bad line change. That, Jeff, was not on Stetcher. What we saw from Stetcher was excellent. I'm convinced he's better than Larson. He was better than Larson that game. And now guess what? We're going to have what we all wanted, what all the Troy soldiers out there wanted. They wanted him to get a chance, and he's going to get it now. We couldn't have asked for anything more, J-Pat.
All right, so this is how I know how fired up you are. You twice referred to me as Jeff, and only at the end there did you call me J-Pat, so you know that Botch is next-level stuff. I took the night off the other night. I watched it on TV, but you were here. Describe for me, though, what the night would have been like had Troy Stetcher not been a part of that hockey game, because there was no other possible takeaway for the Vancouver Canucks or their fans.
It would have been among the most depressing hockey games you've ever seen, because it was the Ottawa Senators. And to get shut out like that at home, to see Henrik Sedin staring at an open net and not shoot the puck in, it would have been an incredibly frustrating experience. One of the, and probably worse than some of the ones we saw at the end of last year, because we started getting numb to it at the end of last year. This year, there was some semblance, despite, you know, the 65-point predictions, there was semblance of hope here in Vancouver. And certainly after you watch them play against the St. Louis Blues, which right now to me is the high watermark, the really the peak of the 2016-17 Canucks, after you see them play a game like that, okay, like maybe they can get some wins at home. And they did start out that way this year. But to play like that against the Sens, if Stetcher wasn't in the lineup, man, it would have been really rough.
Well, I thought it pretty funny that you wanted to do today's podcast from the Stetcher household out in Richmond. And I thought, Botch, no. You know, stalker, restraining order, all that kind of stuff. You got to cross international borders to do your job. So probably not the best play to, at some point though, you may have to investigate that story, get an invite to the Stetcher household and see the shrine, like the picture, the minor hockey pictures, the wall, the uniforms, like everything that has gone into making Troy Stetcher the player that he is.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see if he has a restraining order on me by then or not. But man, now we're going to get to find out, because here the news is that Chris Tanev's not playing, that Chris Tanev is in a walking boot, that appears he's not going to be playing, I don't know, this week, anytime soon, we'll see. But for the immediate future, we're going to see once and for all, who is better here? Is it Stetcher? Is it Larson? I find it hilarious that I hear all these people, Larson's got to be given an opportunity. You got to give him a chance. Well, Yannick Weber was in the exact same position last year that Larson is this year, except he had more on his resume. He had just come off a season with 11 goals. He is the one that kind of helped ignite the power play, this power play, the Sedin's power play, when it was at its best 2 years ago, got into the top 10. They signed him as a restricted free agent, so no longer is he a Mike Gillis guy. Benning re-upped him, signed him. To start that season, we expected him to be in the lineup. Hutton outplays him. There was no outrage then. There was no one saying, Yannick Weber must be in this lineup. Yannick Weber must be given a chance. So I find it hilarious that all of a sudden now there are these Larson people that say he has to be given an opportunity to play here. And if Stetcher is better, I don't think you have an option.
Is your boy up to the challenge? Like, as weekends go in the NHL, McDavid followed by Ovechkin on back-to-back nights, Botch.
It's again, this is an impossible situation he's being asked to succeed in. Because he really is, when you think about it, just a few weeks removed from playing in the NCAA. But man, like if he pulls, like look out, if he pulls this off, I will have entire sections of the newspaper dedicated to him.
What if they survive this weekend, Edmonton and Washington, the start of the road trip is Montreal. The Habs are 6-0-1 to start this. Like, it's getting tougher from here. Like, if somehow, like, already this talk about fatigue, this is one of the things I wanted to get to. Like, I mean, 7 games in, all in the Pacific time zone, the only road trip, you know, back to back, a 45-minute bus ride in Anaheim, and somehow fatigue is an issue for this team already?
Yeah, but before they went to Anaheim, I already heard people around the Canucks talking about that the team was tired. Sorry, before they went to LA, before they had that LA game. Then they had the game in LA, and then I started hearing people around the team saying, you know, the injuries, the Tanev injury and these injuries could have been caused by fatigue. And, it was a tough start. It's unusual to play the 6 games in 9 days to start the year. But guys like the Sedins and Eriksson had been playing at the World Cup. It is, as you point out, the start of the season. You should be ready at the start of the season to be able to pull that off.
Well, that's my thing. I mean, this road trip, well, starting this weekend is 7 games in 12 nights. Like, compressed schedule, there's going to be all sorts of these stretches throughout the season. And so I'm hearing fatigue in the early going, and I'm thinking, oh, my goodness. I don't know that you can blame it on fatigue, whatever it was. I think what we saw here on Tuesday against Ottawa is going to be replayed a number of nights where, you know, they fall behind and then, you know, it clicks in that, you know, now you need 2 to win a hockey game, and 2 just looks like it's going to be a monumental challenge. I mean, at some point, Louis Erickson will score, but with every passing game, I mean, that becomes more and more of a story. We can get to him in a sec, but you mentioned Vertanen, and I want to go there.
Can you just, like, I mean, you were the one. Because I was kind of reading the information as it was coming out yesterday. I was at home and not here. So I'm trying to piece together, okay, how did this Vertanen story come out? How did it? And I thought maybe, like, you can explain, because I think that you were the one that kind of initiated the conversation with the coach. The coach went first, and then you guys all took that to the scrum with Jake. Now, did you start that? Were you planning to do a story? Is he hurt? Is he not? Like, what was your original angle heading in to yesterday?
I came to the rink yesterday. It was an optional skate, so you know, limited options in terms of players to talk to. I thought, okay, Virtanen's out there. The fact that he's taking part in an optional, to me, would say he's not injured, right? Like, if that shoulder's a real problem, like, wouldn't he take the day off? Wouldn't they get him treatment instead of him being out there? It wasn't a taxing workout, but I just thought, all right, that's curious to me. It says something that he's taking part in this workout and not getting a bunch of treatment. So I thought, okay, I'm going to talk to Virtanen and just talk a little bit about, you know, the fact that he's not playing in third periods now, that clearly the coach, when he's shorting the bench, he doesn't see Virtanen as a guy that, you know, is going to help them get that goal or goals that they need. And, you know, in Los Angeles and Anaheim, back-to-back nights, and he played, but he didn't play a lot. And so I just kind of wanted to talk to him about where his game was at this point. But you're right, the coach went first. So I asked Willie, hey, you know, we saw Jake in the second half of last season. After the World Juniors, you know, he looked like a guy who you could lean on, could make things happen, used his size effectively, used that speed. You know, we're just not seeing any of that. You know, what do you see? And that's when Willie talked about, you know, he's got to be a top nine and probably a top six guy on this team, but right now not getting enough out of him. We've talked to him, those types of things. And, you know, there was enough from the coach. So basically I just went with Jake and I just said, look, the coach says right now, you know, your game's not where it needs to be sort of a top nine guy. Would you agree with that? Left it wide open, just right. Put it on a platter and left it for Jake.
And that was the first question there. And how did he respond to that?
Well, that's when he talked about that he agreed that he hadn't been all that good, but, and then it was, you know, it's hard to do with, he said 5 to 7 minutes of ice time. Wow. Like, he hasn't played less than 8.5. I think 8:24 is his low water mark. That was opening night. But he said 5 to 7. So, you know, he's kind of lowballing what the coach is actually giving him. And then it kind of went from there about it's hard with, you know, he thinks he's got chemistry with Berchi and Horvat, but he's not getting to play with them. And it wasn't malicious. And I know a lot of people thought, oh, here's this guy, like he's using the media and he's popping off. I didn't take that. What I took away was, man, this guy looks lost right now, confused. Clearly his confidence is shot. He talked about how he remembered last year, you know, those bull rushes that we all, you know, wow, this guy like down the wing and just cut hard to the net and take a defenseman with him and either score or draw a penalty, those kinds of things. You know, we're not seeing that. And he said, like right now, I'm more concerned about which side of the puck I'm on. I know that, you know, if I make a mistake, that's going to hurt me. And think about that. Like, he's all up inside his own head, clearly, when he's on the ice. Pretty hard to play at your best and be effective if that's the mindset. But he's got to find a way, and they have to help him find a way to sort of clear his mind so he can just get out there and play.
Yeah, and I saw you did a piece for Canucks Army, and you talked about a lot of that, and especially the stuff about being in his own head and how he's lacking confidence. But I'm not seeing the speed, man. Like, I know that he's got a lot of concerns. He wants to be on the right side of the puck, and he doesn't want to mess up. But pretty much every game last year, or regularly anyway, the games that he played, you would see that play along the sideboards where he pokes a puck past a defenseman and then beats him along the wall and creates something as he cuts toward the net. I haven't seen that once this year. I know that the shoulder thing, is he hurt? Is he not hurt? Well, I'm not sure. I have my own theory on it, and I'm going to get into that probably tomorrow night again in the Provies. But you look at the hits. Like, this is a ferocious hitter who has been a ferocious hitter in this league, and it's just absolutely 100% not there. So I get the struggling offensively. I get not creating chances. I get overthinking things. I don't get, where's the speed? Where's that gone? And why is he not following through on his hits and running guys through the boards when he has opportunities? And he has had opportunities to do that.
No, and I think that's all valid, and I don't know. I don't have an answer. I mean, he was asked about the shoulder. He says that the shoulder isn't injured. He talked about being sore a little bit, but having to play through soreness, that, you know, that comes with the territory
of
being a...
Whoa, I missed this. He said, I'm sore? Generally, I'm sore. What?
Yeah, he talked a little bit about... one of the questions was about that play on the end boards, yeah, where nobody's quite sure. He's saying he got slashed and that it was more his leg and he kind of fell awkwardly than anything to do with his shoulder. And then somebody followed up about the shoulder, and he said that, you know, there's some soreness going back to the preseason, but that it's not injured. And again, to my point about, you know, if he was truly hurt, I don't think this organization would put him in harm's way. First of all, if he wasn't able to play, the coach yesterday said, look, I haven't seen anything on the medical report. That's what I go off of. So the coach is taking his cues from the training staff. And then again, you know, I just don't think Jake would be practicing, even in an optional practice, if he was truly hurt. So, you know.
Well, I mean, if there is any kind of problem, as long as he's not getting hit, he could be practicing. And there very well could be a scenario where they could say, yeah, it can't get worse. You play through it. Like, you have to remember, at the end of his draft year, he shredded his shoulder. Okay, he ended up needing surgery. He still went to Europe and played in the U18s after that. He has incredibly high pain tolerance, and it's happened before. So I agree. Like, all we're doing is speculating, and we're going through the evidence, and you have evidence on one side, which makes you believe one thing. But I, again, always go back to the hits and the speed. And I think that if you were worried about hitting someone and going through boards, you may not skate as fast as you normally would.
Well, I look forward to the Provies. I double look forward to the Provies. I always look forward to the Provies, but now I really look forward to tomorrow night's Provies. Double dose? Are you up to a double dose of Provies Friday, Saturday?
I think so, yeah. Like, I had this Anton Rodin bit saved for Friday, and on Tuesday at the game, Kuz was all fired up about asking everyone about Rodin, and I said, and I had the story. I had done a lot of legwork, talked to his agent, talked to the Canucks. I had it down, and I said, dude, like, all this Trampkin stuff is going on. I've got to include all this Trampkin stuff in the Provies tonight. I'm saving my Rodin thing for Friday. So tonight, don't ask about Rodin. I'm saving it for Friday. So he said, yeah, okay. So on Tuesday night, he didn't ask about Rodin. Then all of a sudden, yesterday, he asks about Rodin. And the coach said, yeah, he's on a 4 to 6 week program, and we're probably not going to see him for a while, which is kind of the lead of my whole Rodin bit. So I'm a little bit miffed at that, but otherwise, yeah, of course, I'm ready for back-to-back Provies.
So you and Kuz in an octagon sometime soon? Is that what it's coming down to, a death match?
No, get in line. He's way down the list of guys I'll be fighting in the octagon.
Seems to be the general manager of the Canucks, right before the start of the season, offered up on radio. I could go back and find the tape, but he suggested that his third and fourth lines were going to be able to outscore the third and fourth lines of a lot of other teams. And he thought that that would be, you know, one of the recipes to success for the Vancouver Canucks. Watch, as I sit here with you today, Bo Horvat has 3 goals. I believe he's the only bottom six forward that has scored for the Canucks. Now, not many forwards have scored at all, but I mean,
I actually thought that their fourth line the other night, this is why I was kind of surprised at all the Vertanen stuff, and I thought that originally you may have been thinking, like, is he hurt or not, rather than why is he playing so shitty, because I thought that fourth line was pretty good, and that it was one of their better lines. They had the best ratio of shot attempt differential in the game. So I wasn't really concerned about the fourth line. I did look at the third line and think, like, why is this? Like, what's wrong with Fanberchi? Even though two of the best chances in the game were kind of a Berchi in a lone chance where you try to go five hole, and then the chance, the kind of dynamic end in rush that Horvat made, and he got a chance on. And those were two of the best chances that they had in the game. But I wrote about this today. Like, I don't know how you can ask that Horvat and Berchi combo to produce goals if you are going to exclusively deploy them in a defensive role. If they're always going to be taking the D-zone faceoffs, and on Tuesday night they took no offensive zone faceoffs, you're always asking them, or a lot of the time, too much of the time, to go end-to-end to score a goal. It's too much to ask of those two guys right now in their career. I think they're two of the more dynamic offensive guys you have on the team. Willie has to, the team's dead last right now in goals in the league. He has to find a way to put Horvat and Berchi in opportunities where they can use their offense better and they have more chances to score. Horvat now is 19%. His offensive zone ratio is 19%. He's near the bottom of the entire league. Like, there's only 30 guys out of like 500 or 470 that have a lower percentage of offensive zone faceoffs. I don't think that's getting the most out of Horvat. I do think that that third line can produce. I do think that it actually produced more chances the other night than the Sutter line. But every game, it can't be like this. Why can't it switch up? Like, why can't some games Sutter, that line, be the defensive group? Like, why does it have to be every single game, you know, Horvat is going to be in this, you know, real defensive deployment type situation? Because to me, those two lines should be interchangeable because they both can do multiple things. They both can be defensive, and there are times when they're going where you can get more out of them and try to get them in situations where they can score.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Botch, you're mowing my lawn with all the statistics there. I have to ask you to stop. I may need the restraining order if you continue to go down that path. What about deployment, though? You talk about, you know, the Sutter, Hanson, Granlund line was going into the Hall of Fame after the first week when they were 4-0. Like, the city couldn't get enough of them. Granlund has cooled a little. Hanson, obviously, you know, in terms of goals, hasn't produced as much as he did last year. It's early in the season. I get that. But just what about, okay, Bo and Berchi, but who do you like on the other side there? And again, as players are dropping and Willie's kind of mixing things up, like, what's the optimal deployment for Bo Horvat?
Well, I've been pretty clear from this since the first day you put it in my head, which I think was like August or something, when you said like the best lineup, maybe Hanson with the Twins and Erickson on another line. And I think Berchi, Horvat, and Erickson is the line that probably has the most chance at being successful. But that's only if the coach is willing to put those guys into offensive opportunities. I there's nothing to fear right now when I watch Erickson with the Twins. There's no speed there to push the defenders back. There's no one going in the corners and digging up loose pucks, which is what Burrows did when he was successful with them. And it's what Hanson did last year. I think they need Hanson. I think it's inevitable we're going to get there. And I think ultimately that line, the Horvat line, will be best when it's Berchi, Horvat, Erickson.
Kind of feel like this segment of the podcast should have its own intro. We don't have much of a budget, so we don't have sound effects and stuff. But it's our weekly Nikita Trampkin watch. The latest we heard from Willie Desjardins on radio this morning, he's dropped 3% body fat since the start of camp. So that's something. But I mean, it clearly
a long way to go though. So they always say the first 3% is the easiest.
But clearly, it speaks to the issues that we had addressed, and we got into the great debate about his weight and everything else. I mean, there's no doubt that conditioning was an issue. Willie says it's getting closer. But you've written about this extensively this week, though, too. Like, how is this thing going to end? I still feel that, you know, there may be a little more posturing on both sides here. I think he is going to relent and play his first game this season with the Utica Comets before he plays for the Vancouver Canucks. Not getting sent down. I think when it's all laid out to him and when he gets sick and tired of just being a practice player here, I do think that he's going to agree to go on some sort of conditioning assignment to get into some games in a North American rink with the Utica Comets as maybe a peace offering, that olive branch to the Canucks to say, I'll do this if you guys assure me that I'm going to get into some game action at some point, but I think we see him there before we see him here.
Looking at, like, the craziest thing that I found, or the most surprising thing when I looked into it, like, he's got a couple of agents that are representing him. Like, this guy is Todd Diamond's one, and the other one used to represent Pavel Bure. And my understanding is that they're supportive of the Canucks' kind of pitch that he play in Utica, which is kind of asking to renegotiate the deal, because they did negotiate a contract which basically allowed him to say no to Utica. And when they put that clause in there, he was saying no to Utica. He was saying, I'm going to come there, but I'm not going to Utica even if you try to make me. And I want that clause in the contract. And he earned it. He negotiated. He got it in there. The most surprising thing is that those agents, to my understanding, are supportive of the idea of him playing in Utica, but that someone else out there is in his head telling him, whatever you do, man, you cannot go to Utica. You cannot play in the AHL. With that body on those buses, they will break you. So to every overture that the Canucks have laid out there, he said no, to the point that at the end of this next road trip, the Utica Comets, and they're out in Detroit at the end, the Comets have two home games on a Friday, Saturday. The Canucks' plan is to say, look, we're going to leave you behind for those two games. We're not asking you to take the long bus ride, so don't worry about how it's going to affect your back and your body and all that weight. Just stay around, play the two games, and come back. The Canucks when I was talking to them, said, we're going to ask him to do that. We don't think he's going to do it. So you're more positive right now about him playing in the AHL than the Canucks are.
I didn't think he'd get sick eventually of being a practice guy. And I watched him yesterday. He's out here in front of us as we do this podcast. They're practicing again. But yesterday in the optional, like, it's eight guys. It was kind of loose skills coach out there, none of the main coaching staff. Most of the guys were having fun. And for the most part, you know, he's just off on an island. Like, he doesn't seem like he's part of this mix necessarily with the language barrier. Not that the language will be any better, but Pedan, at the very least, is in Utica right now. Like, there's somebody he could latch on to for a little while. But I just think at some point he's going to get sick and tired of just being a practice guy with no payoff. And if the road to getting into this lineup is playing a couple of games at the American Hockey League level, I think he'll come around.
Yeah, and you know, the Canucks are... There's multiple reasons they want to play. And playing, getting into game shape is a huge one. And that's the best way, really. Playing a lot of games in multiple weeks is the best way to get into shape for him to get into shape. So I can understand the conditioning stint makes sense. He still gets the NHL per diem and the NHL salary and all of those things. They also want him to learn English. Like, for him to participate in what's happening on the ice and interact with these guys, his English has to be better. So there's several reasons that they want him to go down there and do it. And they say, like, look, do you want to be around here for a couple of years, make a mill this year and a mill next year? Or do you want to have a shot at, like, a $30 million, $100 million contract? And if you want a shot at that, go and play AHL games. So it's a pretty good pitch, you know. And I think it was Pet Bugs tweeted me the list of guys, the top 30 earners in the KHL. And when you get to 30th, you're down to a million. So to make what he's making here back there, he's going to have to be one of the top 30 guys realistically. And is he going to be that in the KHL? Probably not. Like, they believe in him here. They believe he can be a top four guy. Like, and we do know that if they think you're a top four guy, they are going to pay you pretty well here. So if I'm Trampkin and I'm looking at some of the salaries and what Spies is making, I'm thinking, yeah, maybe I should do this. That all said, is there a possibility that, like us, he's sitting there watching Philip Larson and Lucas Spezza play defense and thinking to himself, why the F do I have to go down to Utica when I'm better than these guys right now?
Well, I want him to learn English because, well, A, I'd like just to talk to the guy, have a conversation. I think it'd be a fascinating story if you could actually break him down and get to him. But if he spoke English, we might get him on the podcast someday.
That is the dream, right? We can get to the bottom of all the weight debate. When was he 228? Like, when last? Like, I've got to, when was he 228 pounds that we saw everywhere listed? At some point, he must have weighed in on that. So, yeah, we have a lot of questions for Trampkin. He's one of the most popular topics on the podcast, and I do hope one day we're able, even if we can just sit at his locker one day, and you and I sit, like, we'll put him in the middle, and we'll just, like, go back and forth with him.
Any concerns that he would eat a guy like Troy Stetcher for lunch?
their lockers are, have you seen them stand side by side? It does look pretty ridiculous. And there was some question, like, Trampkin's weight. There's some question has always been Stetcher, because he was listed at 5'8". Sometimes I've seen him at 5'10". In a couple of places, I've seen him listed at 5'11". So how tall is Troy Stetcher? And I did see him standing beside you once, and you guys looked like dead. Like, I wish I had a laser on my phone to really measure it, but you guys look dead even. Are you, how tall are you? Like,
well, I just wish you had taken a photo for me. Just me standing right beside, that's true. Well, I saw Jay Janner was tweeting photos from inside the locker room the other day, so I haven't seen him since. The Canucks may have got to him.
Because on Stetcher night, there was a group of reporters, I guess, from Tawasin or Richmond, from the local paper, and they were trying to snap pictures of their boy, and the Canucks PR quickly stepped in and said, that's not happening in here.
Maybe the rules don't apply to Double J. I'm 5'9", maybe 5'9 and a half, so certainly not 5'10". If he was standing beside me and we're...
The right day you can get to 5'9 and a half?
With lifts in the shoes. Hey, run this down for me. Again, I wasn't here on game day, but you and I went back and forth on direct message. Just the chain of events to get to Troy Stetcher after his first game day skate here on Tuesday.
I was pretty pissed that day because I really, like, you know, I... And people are doing their Stetcher stories during the day, and I get all that, right? But I'm trying to getting to talk to my guy because I'm expected to have Stetcher news in the Provies, right? And there's an expectation there that I'm going to have some stuff in there that you're not going to see elsewhere and haven't read already that day. So I wait patiently. There's a huge scrum, maybe like 7 or 8 cameras all around them. There's no way I'm getting anywhere near that. That breaks off. And then it's a few guys. It's Ewan. It's Woodley. It's a couple of the writers. And I'm waiting that. And then all of a sudden there's a line of like the Canucks media elite. Like first it's Shorty's got to get in there. Good game, man. How's it been going? Congratulations. He's got to rub shoulders with him. Then DT's got to step in and he's got to say what a great job that Stetcher's been doing and talk to him. So I'm thinking, okay, once DT is done, the line looks pretty clear. I'm going to step in. I just about to step in. Canucks PR grabs him, spins him off, gives him to Sportsnet. Murph gets a one-on-one. Then Jay Janhart gets a one. So I'm waiting for Double J to finish his one-on-one. Sure enough, as I'm just about to talk to him, Alfred comes in, grabs him, and he goes, you got a 1040. It takes him out of the room to Sakaris to go do a big 1040 interview. And I'm like, fuck, I was so frustrated, and I told you, I was so pissed, I got shut out. And then you said, well, you could have used that time getting to know Philip Larson. You're right. Maybe I should. Maybe, you know, if I'm not going to be able to interview Stetcher, maybe I'm going to have to change sides here on this debate.
It's Philip Larson, a poor man's Troy Stetcher. You know, that's what they say.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, what's going to happen if he is good? Like, if he does score goals? And if it does work out how the Troy soldiers among us think it will, I'll never be able to talk to him again, I don't think.
Well, he's getting after hours on Saturday night and getting the towel and the hat and the whole bit.
Yeah, so I think I'm starting to think, it was like the Ryan Miller trade. I was looking at all the hype, all the, Miller's going to be traded. All those guys were getting, I'm thinking, I may need to flip sides and start saying that Miller's going to be traded. I also may need to flip sides and start talking to Philip Larson. He could be Provi's gold.
What a week. Because the Ryan Miller trade talk to Los Angeles on Friday was through the roof. It took us 30 minutes here on the packet. We didn't even get around to that. That's how much other stuff has happened here in 1 week for the Vancouver Canucks. That's what happens when Troy Stetcher returns to the fold. Ryan Miller is back. He's returned from his tightness on opening night, back in the lineup. We saw him play on the weekend, saw him play against Ottawa. Look, goaltending has been the least of this team's concerns, as it was down the stretch last year. Whether it's Miller, whether it's Markstrom, for the most part, they know that they're going to have adequate goaltending.
Yeah, someone pointed out to me, this is how far we've fallen, that no more do we have goalie controversies. We have six controversies over the sixth defenseman. look what you've done to us. But what are you gonna, Ryan Miller's been fine. I don't think they're gonna trade him. I don't think that Jim has no interest in trading Ryan Miller. It's just, he's declared it before. But last week I couldn't go anywhere without people asking me, when are they trading Miller, and how many draft picks and how many prospects are they gonna get in return. Pratt did an amazing job of hyping that story up. And by Saturday, it was I was watching Hockey Night thinking, this is going to come up because it has become that big. It was on the Sportsnet local broadcast. I had written about it and I thought for sure Hockey Night was going to get into it, but that this team has to be out of the playoff race before they entertain that. Can you imagine if they traded Miller to the Kings? And Jim's whole thing is we got to make the playoffs and then the Kings get in and the Canucks don't. I don't think he'd be working again next year.
All right. You've got your first road trip of the season coming up. It's first big road trip for the Canucks. You and Kuz, a little job share. You're going north of the border. He's going south of the border, as I understand it. So you're seeing the Eastern Canadian trip. So you're going to, the Eastern Canadian cities, you're going to be there in Montreal for the start of this road trip.
I will be there for the Montreal for the best team in the NHL, I guess, supposedly. The rematch, the revenge game, the biggest rivalry in hockey, Senators, Canucks. I will be there, man. I'll take photos for you. You can see what it's all like. We can relive everything that we saw last week. We can talk about the Heritage Classic again, Sens, Canucks, and then, yeah, it ends in Toronto. So I'm pretty stoked about that. They got shut out. How are they going to punch back when they get to Ottawa?
All right, we like to end on a non-hockey note. McDavid coming in, Ovechkin coming in. Those are both big events here this weekend. But Monday, Botch, is Halloween. You've got three little ones.
Yeah,
Do they have their costumes?
Yeah, the costumes are there. One of them's like a character from this Monster High thing. The other one's a butterfly. But I'm out on. I'm leaving the wife. Like I leave on Monday, so she. I was pretty excited actually. I don't enjoy the whole experience of Halloween.
You don't like and people coming to your door begging for free stuff?
No, and the worst is the dudes that come there with like the baby that they're holding. Have you ever seen that? They're like trick or treat. Like what the fuck? You have a baby, man. Why am I going to give you candy? Like, well, I don't get that. What do they do? How, can you explain that one to me? They dress. They have these baby costumes where they dress. They're kind of onesies. And it'll be like a monkey onesie, a dinosaur onesie. And they hold the baby up in the front door. Here's my baby dressed in a stupid dinosaur. Trick or treat. And I'm like, are you kidding, man? Like, no man. Like, I'm not into the whole Halloween thing. So I was really excited. To be like, are your kids still do the Halloween thing?
My daughter, this is the last one. I think we've all agreed. She's 13. She's kind of agreed that she'll retire from Halloween after this. My kid, my 10-year-old, he's still all in. He's going as the Grim Reaper. I don't know what my daughter's going as, but this podcast just reached a totally new level because we got Botch to utter the phrase monkey onesie. So if I don't do another thing in my broadcast career to hear Botch say monkey onesie, can't believe you're leaving your wife with three, though. She's got to play defense. She's got to mind the door, but she got to get the kids out and around town to do the trick-or-treating. I thought for sure you were going to tell your kids they had no choice, all three of them, to dress up like Troy Stetcher.
Little Stetcher jerseys. Man, you know what? I never even thought about that. I may have to change.
There's time, but
sell them at the store? Like, I heard people did send me photos in, like, training camp of Stetcher jerseys in the Canuck. I've never seen like a guy basically trying out to make the team already with jerseys in the Canucks store. Did you? You never came across that, eh? But if they are there and they do have girls size and for like 5 and 4 year olds, yeah, maybe I will dress them up as Stetcher. They'll spend the day as Stetcher and then they can go out as night as what they choose.
Knock, knock, knock. And the people open the door. Trick or treat. What are you? And then this look of disdain. We're Troy Stetcher, of course. Like, the people wouldn't know. Come on.
They will know his name. They will know.
There you go. Happy travels. Botch heading out on the road. We'll hook up with him from some point in Eastern Canada next week on the next edition of the PatCast. That's going to do it for this week here on Province Radio.